Talo Falava, I'm Sosef Womoli. Join me for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe our Islander audiences love by artists from across the seas as well. Search up ABC Sister Sounds to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Wendy Mocky. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to two remarkable Papua New Guinean women whose lives have been shaped by the arts. Dr. Sophie Naimer is a scholar and lecturer whose work bridges theatre, culture and women's leadership. Ellen Messibere is a performer and theatre director whose vision has lit up community stages and inspired a generation of artists. Together, they've built pathways for young storytellers. First, how two women found each other through theatre and built a movement of their own. Welcome Sophie and Ellen to Stories from the Pacific.
Oh, thank you so much,
Thank
Wendy.
You so much, Wendy.
Now, the arts arrived early for you both, in schoolrooms, on the radio, and in Sunday school performances. Sophie, what was your first real encounter with art or performance that made you think, this is what I want to do?
Well, I have to go back down memory lane and go to when I was very young on an island in Milne Bay, Normanby Island. That's where I grew up. I used to listen to Karai Radio. So it's like the main national radio here in PNG. And there used to be a radio program that they used to play every Sunday evening around 6 p.m. And that's the day that I never miss. I tune in every 6 p.m. to listen to the cry of the cassowary. And I think that's when I really found my passion and love for the arts, because I was so curious on how it was produced. And that's where my drive and motivation began.
And Ellen, you grew up surrounded by nature and stories handed down through the women in your family. How did storytelling first weave itself into your everyday life?
Growing up in a valley in Musa, right, is, I'm not really sure whether most Papua New Guineans would remember Musa. It's actually, Musa is the name of the valley and the river that runs into this little place called Safia. And not a lot of people would know where that is. I can say that my dad was influential in that he was already involved in cultural performances, in our cultural dancing. And so at a very young age, being out there in isolation on a farm, whenever he got bored or something like that, he'd bring out the kundu and start, you know, singing, and I'd be just there following his steps and stuff like that. But also, I had the whole yard to imagine, you know, use my imagination, talking to the flowers, the horses, and the cows.
Now, for you both, who were the people who first showed you what creativity could look like in a Papua New Guinean context?
Wow. We didn't even think about it like that.
Yeah. Well, I began my, I think, the creative life in church.
Yeah.
And, you know, acting out the Bible stories. And at some point, we had to preach with youths, you know, my colleagues, youth colleagues, or my team members. And I think the idea of interpreting scripts from the Bible, either through oratory or through drama, really, I think, established that foundation for drama or the arts in me, and the creativity and the ability to deliver or transfer one information to another in that form.
Mm.
Yeah, and then in primary school, arts at our time in the 1980s was really, really strong, expressive arts.
Yeah.
It was part of our extracurricular, but it was like one of the cores that we did, and dance and drama, art and craft were all part of our learning every day. And yeah, I grew up on the island, so I learned someone else's culture. while there, because it was that beginning of my art life, I think.
Primary school played a really big role in my parents decided to send me to Gordon's. After we came back, we relocated back to the city. They sent me to Gordon's Inter. And I think the 4 years I spent there was the one that really, because, you know, we did folk dancing, we did, you know, student productions. And, you know, even though I played really little roles in that, it planted a seed, I should say. And so by the time I came to high school, high school, I went to New Zealand. And if that was even, you know, another big push, because you had the choir and then you had the drama, which were core subjects again.
Beautiful. And you both, and you mentioned it before, but you both grew up in a time when theater in PNG wasn't distant or seen as something elite, but was very much woven into community life, whether it was through church or cultural song and dance. I'm wondering, how did that shape the artist you are today?
For me, it built a lot of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it was the drive to go further, to know how things are really, really done, you know, in theory, and how it is applied in practice. And the university was the only place that taught theater.
Yeah.
So that was my main aim. And I aimed to hit university, and I never changed my path. It really, really set the foundation for me, and it really drove me towards coming to uni, because it was it's still the only institution in the country that teaches art as art and not, you know, not as technical skills. Or my aim was to get as far as I could and come here to uni and learn more about the arts.
I was really privileged too, because at the time that I was in grade 10, because at the time we didn't have a lot of high schools. You just had the Passam, the Sangeri, and
National
Aira, you know, the four main. And also because my math sucked really badly.
I don't think maths is a strength for any artist.
So I was like, Ellen, they have theater at uni, you know. And this is 16, by the way, at 16. And so I was like, yeah, I'll probably die, but let's just make that choice.
Yeah.
And
you took a risk and it paid off. Now, your careers took different turns. Sophie into academia at the University of Papua New Guinea, and Ellen into television, where you hosted a popular children's show on MTV. Yet your journeys kept circling back to each other. There's also another thread that you share. While studying at UPNG, you both became mothers. A life-altering moment that could have ended your studies, yet you chose to persevere. Sophie, what do you remember about those early days of balancing motherhood and study, and how did that shape the teacher you have become?
You know, in the beginning when I applied for theater, my dad and my mom were really, really against it. They said, you should be a teacher. And I said, what teacher? Primary school teacher, just like us. I said, oh, God, no. I'll probably want to teach, but maybe not primary school, because I know how hard they work. Mm-hmm. So when I came to uni, through all the exploration and discovery, I got pregnant. So I had to decide whether I should continue or not. But the person that really pushed for me to continue was my dad.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, the one that didn't want me to come into theater in the first place anyway.
Oh, so, but he understood that you had to complete what you started.
Yeah, because, you know, why would I come this far and not continue? So what happened was my parents took my son and allowed me to continue and finish, because I was just 2 years before I get my degree. So they said, you know, we'll just support you through. So I think the greatest support was from them. And then I had my eldest sister teaching here at Port Moresby. So she was also my support while I was here. So yeah, family played a biggest role in my education and in trying to complete my studies while being a mother. So really, I didn't get the chance to be with my child when I was studying until 6 years later after I completed my honors and then started teaching here at uni. I never left uni. So yeah, that's how long, probably 20 years here.
Wow. And all the sacrifices you made along the way. Yeah, that's definitely.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes. I think one of the things that I had to tell myself was, since you brought yourself into this, you need to complete, you need to get a job, and you need to take care of your child. So that was the only thing that was keeping me here and going, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, incredibly inspiring, yeah, to know that, yeah, you're still able to cross that finishing line with all those added responsibilities along the way.
Yes.
Ellen, what kept you going during that period? And I guess, what did motherhood teach you about yourself?
That no one's going to give it to you. You got to go out there and get it yourself, you know, and especially with my boys at such a young age and then trying not to make what my parents, you know, say be the end and all in it. Yeah. So, yeah, I stayed at home maybe a couple of years. And then one of our colleagues was going to Japan. He used to host the show. He rang me up and said, oh, there's an audition. Why don't you come along? So I went along and, yeah, I got selected and I spent the next 7 years in television as a producer for Kids Corner. It's a children's program.
As the years went by and you both, as your own individual careers progressed, did you always have that family support to guide you along the way? Was that always consistent?
Well, mine, yes. So my parents started my journey off, and then it's funny how the sisters that you you took care of kind of swap roles when you're older.
Oh.
And so when I was studying to do my master's, I took my two young children to Australia, and my younger sisters, whom I used to really take care of, started to, you know, chip in and take care of us. So it was, so that family journey, the family, for us, our family is very, very close. So
yeah,
whichever way, we still take care of each other. So even right now, I'm sending bus fare to my sister while talking to you.
Oh,
that's
my
God. How close. Yeah, and yeah. It never stops.
it never stops. It's endless.
I really love that about her family. Mine are younger. My siblings are younger. And although both of them now live in Australia, I don't have that the same. I think they're just different. They're individuals, and because I'm older, I'm like in a sense of part of our culture. In the southern culture, is, you know, if you are an older sibling, you are meant to take on every responsibility. Good time, no good time.
Through the good times and the bad.
But my parents, my parents were the ones who saw me through the whole thing, you know, because I'm living with them. But I think that's also what influences the outcomes of our shows, is that, you know, how much we live life. It adds to what the output of what we produce.
So it influences.
It influences a lot.
Yeah. Your own sort of personal experiences then sort of reflected in the work that you create. And
Storytelling for us is always family based, and then move out of there.
Community,
you know.
Yeah. Which is so true. You know, when you think about theatre and we think about arts is by the community, for the community. Yes. And the community is our families and where we come from and how we see ourselves in relation to our siblings, older, younger, parents that are supportive, unsupportive, like all those things influence the stories that we then go on to tell as artists. You're listening to Stories from the Pacific with me, Wendy Mocky, here on ABC Radio Australia. And my guests today are Dr. Sophie Nijmeer and Ellen Messimbere. Over time, you became each other's sounding boards, two artists who understand the weight of making theatre in Papua New Guinea. Sophie, What is it about mm-hmm. Ellen that you value the most as both collaborator and friend?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, she's a sister. And sister embodies that closeness. So when she has things that I don't have, like in terms of artistic. I always tell my students, I don't work with people's weaknesses. I only work with strengths. And I learned a lot from her as an artist, especially as a choreographer. And oh my God, she writes some of the best poems that I've, you know, ever had. Mm. And she's a very good writer too. So, but it started off with choreography. And it's the way that she tells the story through dance that really captured my attention. And that was when I was in year one. Anyway, she did Romeo and Juliet. That was the first dance I saw from Ellen.
Ew.
She did the dance with somebody we don't like. That's why she said,
ew. Oh. But
apparently, he was a good dancer at that time.
No, I just didn't hear someone's act with.
Yeah, so the journey began when I saw that first dance. And for some reason, it really captivated me to work with her. But over the years, we grew to be very close like sisters. One thing I realized about Ellen is that she doesn't back off easily until you tell her to. Otherwise, she's there to do the job until it's done. And that's something that, you know, I really admire. And while other people had the privilege of having backups at home, you know, all that, she, in her struggles, she created better for me. Like, that's what I saw. Like, her most creative moments are the times when she didn't
I'm
have
insane
to suffer.
In the
yeah. And the funny thing is that she creates better when I am most angry.
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay.
Most of the things that she wrote were in the moments that I was bursting out in anger, scolding people around us, and she's sitting at the corner writing all these poems, and then she's like, wait a minute, hear this first, and then I'll hear it, and then she gets back into writing. And then I get back into it. It's really funny how we connect.
You both understand each other so beautifully. You kind of fill in where one is, you know, like you kind of care for each other when one is might be a little bit annoyed. The other one kind of then diffuses the situation. And then you both sort of compliment each other in a way that's like a well-oiled machine, I think.
Yeah, that's I suppose that's the way to describe it, weird as it is. You know.
And Ellen, what about Sophie's way of leading and creating gives you strength to keep going in an industry that is tough on artists?
You just said it right there. Like, Sophie is I mean, she's more than just a girl Friday. Like, you know, she's probably my rock, I would say. My rock in a sense where I can crumble. Like, and the only person I think about is her to pick me up. I meant emotionally, like when I'm going through the craziness, the bush in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The jungle in my brain. Yeah. And she's a good leader. She's fair. I mean, it's not just, I can't describe it as well, but she's the friend that, yeah. She's not a friend. She's a sister. She's my captain.
She's your captain.
She's influenced me too in the way that I've set out this journey and stuff, you know, because you know, when you have that bestie and then you're always trying to do something and go, what would Sophie do? not even what would Sophie do, but you can hear her voice and her commentary and you're like, Back off. Yeah, so that type, you know.
Now, you've both spent decades nurturing Papua New Guinean storytelling. Sophie, after years of teaching, what's been the most rewarding and what remains the biggest challenge for you?
Well, most rewarding is when you see students excel in what, you know, they've learned over the years, and whether they're still studying or whether they have graduated and gone and, you know, going beyond what they've learned in uni is something that, you know, I always treasure.
What remains the biggest challenge?
A challenge. Mm. Challenge in Papua New Guinea. When you say challenge, the first thing they think of is, oh, we don't have enough money to do this.
Mm.
Or we have lack resources. And that's the obvious one.
Mm.
The obvious challenge is when you don't know. We run on very limited funds. This division of mine, theater. So we, over the years, we've learned to improvise. We've learned to collaborate. Like Ellen, the challenge that we have here is that we lack staff, enough staff to, you know, with knowledge to run certain aspects of the arts. And Ellen has always been my backup.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
She's always being that collaborator that fills in the gap that, you know, I cannot afford to fill.
Yes.
And, you know, it's around dance that I always invite her to come and work with my students, or I ask for her creations for my students to use as part of assessment. So it really cuts down my time. But another challenge that we have faced over the years is having a good leader. Having a good leader before me who can push for the things we need, who can fight for the things we need. We have never had a chance to work with somebody who really understood arts. You know, we had leadership from social works. We have leaderships from psychology. But nobody really understands what we need. And we are one of the most expensive sections or strands here. We call ourselves strands to run. But we are also the most
independent.
Most of the challenges that I face here is, apart from leadership, is having to work with like-minded people. And that's why I stuck with Ellen for a long, long time, is that she understands what needs to be done, when and how. And we've worked with so many people over the years, mm-hmm. but oh my God, they don't click, they don't link, you know, and that's the challenge.
Now, Ellen, you've spoken about the need for a stronger performing arts infrastructure. What's the hardest part of sustaining an industry that often relies on love, passion, and personal sacrifice rather than institutional support?
I have no idea how to begin. It's funny, like, how you put it, because that is so true. Like, first and foremost, the challenges that we have here is it has to do with space. Just a simple space, like a cultural center where we can produce and perform. And we don't have that. Mm. We don't have that. Yeah, there are days. There are multiple days where I think to myself, you know what? I don't want. It's just too tiring. And then, you know how you have the devil and the angel on one side and then talking to, that's how I feel, because I'm giving up. And then I think to myself, and then what? And then we're going to go back to zero again. Yes, we have a lot of hip-hop dance groups here. We have a lot of contemporary performances, but they lack the knowledge of the process. They have their own processes, and, you know, they're self-taught and all of that. And you see, what we don't want is that ideology of this is what a performance is, and it's just we do it like this, and, you know, this is it. No, it's not it. There are processes, you know, of how to come up. And that's where I come in. Because, you see, out of all of us, all of our generation of theater artists, in theater, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to just be that one person out of how many of us?
Yeah. Everyone's doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Because we don't have the infrastructure
right.
to practice the art.
Yeah. And then they figure that there's no money in it. So.
Yeah.
But which is true. There is no money because we don't have somewhere that we can earn our money. Yeah? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like if we had that platform, I'm talking about the space where we can practice and when we can produce, I am not into, like, we will be able to, you know, earn our own keep as we go. But now as it is, you know, we have to create it and then look for funding and then, you know, and then if there's something bigger that a client, you know, wants us to do, and then that's about it. And then gigging. Obviously,
it's just gigs.
Yeah.
A lot of gigs.
And so it's like a car trying to go up and it's stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even up there. It's just here. And with it is the wealth of knowledge of all your cultural and contemporary, and that's the load you're carrying up over that hill. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to show off to the world and say, oh, PNG is this, that, and the other, only when it matters, only when it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Only when we need to show people rather than actually have it
When we need to show it.
Yeah. Yeah, as a stand, yeah. Okay, yeah. So your shared mission goes beyond the stage. It's about reclaiming the arts as a living part of Papua New Guinea's identity. Through community work, teaching and mentorship, you're ensuring that young people see art not as luxury, but as a language of freedom, yeah? Sophie, how do you see the art shaping PNG's national identity today?
It used to be, you know, the contemporary, using painting, using music to identify who we are. Then we evolved over the years into writing and then now a theater. I think one of the things that influenced the way we create in PNG is our culture, how we use our songs and our dances. If it's not the full dance, it's at least the bass stanza in the way we stand and we move, the bass movement that we use to identify who we are in PNG. And the thing about now, right now, it's just a blend with the current technology, the current trends in terms of fashion, in terms of music. If you see TikTok, there's a lot of the use of our culture, our music with other people's dance, you know, the melting pot of culture. Right now, the challenge that we have in terms of identity and in terms of modernity is how do you correctly blend and how do you correctly execute? And for my students, I always tell them that if you have to use something from your culture, make sure it's authentically correct.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to blend it and merge it with another, make sure that the other is also correct. Because if you do them both incorrect, you have destroyed someone's identity.
And Ellen, what changes have you seen in Papua New Guineans in how they create and value art over the course of your career?
It's very, very different now. It's like I was explaining a few minutes ago about how they're producing on a, how do I say, this is talking about, okay, in dance, there's not, to be honest, a lot of contemporary groups. Not a lot of contemporary groups. Contemporary meaning a fusion of modern and cultural, modern culture, our culture, or even modern dance, so to speak. But there's a lot of hip-hop influence here, which I don't really understand. Oh, wait, what? It's an influence that's from the outside world. And to be honest, if the longer we go on, continue like this, there will be no contemporary.
Mm.
So that's the challenge that we face.
I want to say, you are more than artists, you are custodians of story. Through classrooms, community halls, national stages, you've shown that art is not decoration. Thank you, Sophie and Ellen, for protecting, for teaching, and for dedicating your lives to telling our stories. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific with me, Wendy Mockey, on ABC Radio Australia.